I want to just say a word of appreciation for those of us, or for those of you who are engaged in participating in our Bible class teaching. Today is the beginning of a new quarter, which means we've got some who are entering into the teaching rotation, and some of you have just finished. Some of you finished 6 months straight because you were in the training class, and then you did the 3 months of teaching, and some of you have just finished the 3 months of training, and so you have all devoted a lot of time to teaching. And I just want to say I appreciate that. As a parent, I never cease to be amazed at how much children are able to absorb in our Bible classes. I believe that the greatest responsibility that I have and that you have as a parent is to try to bring up our children so that they have faith in God. If there's any one thing that I should want and that you should want for your children is that we're able to bring them up in a way that they have faith in God. And I thoroughly believe that our Bible classes can be incredibly instrumental in doing that. And from someone who teaches regularly, I know that it takes a lot of effort and time, and it takes a lot of creativity. And I just want to say that I really appreciate all of you who teach our Bible classes at any time, especially those of you who are willing to teach on a regular basis. Give you a question I want you to ponder for a minute. If things in religion look different today than they look in the New Testament, who said that's okay? I think we would have to agree that when we look at some of the religious practices in the world today and we compare that to what we see in the New Testament, there are in some ways, really drastic differences. For instance, if we were to open up our New Testament so we could go all the way from the beginning to the end, and we'd never see women serving as preachers. And we wouldn't see Christians worshiping with instrumental music. We wouldn't see entertainment be part of a worship service. We wouldn't ever find a congregation offering the contemporary worship service to fit the taste of these people, and here's a traditional worship service to accommodate the preferences of these people. And we wouldn't see churches sending money to any organization for any reason. And that list could go on and on and on, but you recognize that when we see some of the religious practices in our world today and we look into the New Testament, we don't see many of those things. And so the question, who says that's okay? Maybe even more to the point, who gives the authority for those things? Now, if all of this is sounding somewhat familiar, you're not just having deja vu. I posed very similar questions, I think, just 2 weeks ago to make us think about the need for authority. And if you don't remember, the takeaway from that lesson is that God's authority matters in everything. Because God is the Creator. That means I belong to Him. That means He has the right to authority, so His authority matters in everything. It matters in my personal life. For everything that I do in my life as an individual, I need to be looking to God for authority. And that's true in our congregations, as a congregation of God's people, when it comes to how we're going to organize our congregation, when it comes to the way we operate, when it comes to the way that we worship, we need to be making certain that we always find God's authority for that order or that organization. Now, that does not just completely close the door on authority. Because we still have to figure out how do we find God's authority. We can establish that, yes, I need His authority, but how do we find it? Well, the easy answer is the Bible, right? Just hold up the Bible and say, well, this is where we find God's authority. and that is correct. We do find it, but we still have to learn how to draw accurate conclusions from what we see in the Bible. We got to learn how to draw accurate conclusions from what we see in the Bible. I want you to think for a minute. If God were to just give us a book, and in this book from God we had in black and white, in very definitive terms, yes or no, if we had an answer for every conceivable question, if we had God's definitive answer for every possible scenario that we could imagine, for everything we might ever contemplate, if we had a book that gave God's definitive answer on that. And I want to suggest that if God gave us that kind of book with a very definitive answer for every possible scenario, every possible question, I suggest we wouldn't have to worry about drawing accurate conclusions, because we would have His definitive answer for everything, wouldn't we? But you know, God has not given us that kind of book, has He? As a matter of fact, the book that we have from God is much different than that. And I think there are some good reasons. I mean, first of all, just imagine the size of a book that contained an answer for every possible thing. Can you imagine the size? It's almost unfathomable how big that book would have to be. And not only that, just imagine trying to navigate through it to try to find the information we're looking for. And that's probably lost on us a little bit, because we've got computers and technology and we can just do word searches. But that's still relatively new. Think about all the Christians in the past who wouldn't have been able to do that. And then I think about the Bible as a timeless book. I think it'd be almost impossible for it to be timeless, because you realize there are Christians in the first century that they wouldn't have the same questions that maybe we have today. I'll give you a really good example. The Christians in the first century never had to decide what kind of worship we could have through Zoom. And so you recognize that for the Bible to be timeless, it's not really possible that there would have been the kind of book that I'm talking about, right? And so what God has done, though, is He's given us a book that does have some specifics. Thou shalt not kill. Pretty specific, right? But He's also given us a book that demands reasoning. He's given us a book that demands that we can draw accurate inferences. He's given us a book that demands paying attention to principles and learning how to make applications. And I want to suggest that's where all of the widespread differences in religion really comes. It's from when we start drawing conclusions, we sometimes draw away different conclusions. And so what I want to do now is I want to just talk for a few minutes about how do we draw accurate conclusions from what we have in the Scriptures. How do we draw accurate conclusions? Now, I want to suggest that everything has to start right here. It has to start right here. We can only know something if it's been revealed. That's part of the Bible reading that we had just a minute ago. Amongst other things, Paul is making the point that I'm not preaching the wisdom of this world. I'm not presenting to you the wisdom of man. I'm presenting to you wisdom from God. But only because God has revealed that is the only reason we know it. That's the point that Paul's making. And we can easily, I think, understand that in our own way. Here's how we understand that. Is it safe for me to assume that Jim likes Chinese food if Jim has not communicated that to me? Is it safe to assume that he likes it or dislikes it if he hasn't said anything? Now, I hope the obvious answer to that is no. I shouldn't assume that he likes it or dislikes it if he hasn't said anything about it. Now, I happen to know how Jim feels about Chinese food, and I will just say that we don't agree. But for the sake of illustration, let me just tell you that unless he communicates it, I don't know. And I want to suggest he could communicate that in a few different ways. Jim may just shout out loud from the rooftops, "I love Chinese food." He could do that. And I would know because he said very directly he loves it. He might show me that he loves Chinese food. He may walk by my office twice a week, say, "Hey, I'm headed out to get some lunch. Going to pick up some Chinese food." I think that would be him showing me, "I really like Chinese food." Or maybe I can infer it in some other way. Maybe he tells Jacob, maybe I overhear him telling Jacob, "Boy, I could really go for some Chinese food right now." You see, then he's showing me something. He's telling me something. He's giving me some information that I can draw conclusions from. Now, as silly as that may sound to us, I want you to understand I'm not oversimplifying. I cannot presume to know something unless it has been revealed. And that is incredibly important when we're thinking about finding God's authority. We have to start with this, that we cannot know it if God hasn't revealed us to us. So what I want to suggest is that what I just showed you in an example, there's only really one way to, overall way to communicate something. And I think when we try to find God's authority, this is really important that we recognize all we have to do is pay attention to basic communication skills. There are just basic communication skills, and I think that's important for us to see, because I don't want you to think I've just made up my own way that we find authority. I want you to understand that really there's only one way to communicate, and it just makes sense that God would communicate with us in really the only way. And so that may be God telling us something very directly. Or it may be God is showing us something through an example. God may be showing us His approval of something. Or maybe there's just enough information that we're able to make some inferences. And we can imply certain things from what's been said. So, that being said, that's what I want us to see. Now, I also want to tell you there is a depth to all of this. This is not one sermon type stuff. This is not one sitting type stuff, because there is a depth to even the direct statements. And here's what I mean by that. Everybody here under the authority of God has been commanded to love your neighbor as yourself. That's the command. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, what does that mean? How does that look in real life? What are the real life applications of that? Well, I've got to have more than just the telling, right? I've got to have more than just the command. I have to be able to now figure out what that looks like in real life. So what do I do? Well, I can comb through my scriptures, and maybe God has said some other things about love that helps me understand. Maybe there's an example that I can draw from, and now I can start making some applications based on what's been revealed. Maybe, for instance, Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. You think that's a good example that I can draw from of what it maybe looks like to love my neighbor? I think so. James, in James chapter 2, writes about loving your neighbor, but he gave the scenario where two men came into the assembly and they were treated drastically different because one was wealthy and the other was poor. And James says, you've done some wrong there in that you've shown partiality. Do you see the point? Even when there's a very direct statement, I still have to be able to draw in some reasoning and some inferences and use some examples to come to accurate conclusions as to what that means. And of course, when it comes to what we've been shown through an example, we've still got to do things like figure out, well, here's an example. What part of that is binding? And what parts of that are incidental? For instance, we read about Christians coming together for worship, and they met in an upper room, and the preacher preached till midnight. Well, there's an example. You tell me, which of those do we want to be binding, and which of those do we think is just kind of incidental? You know which one we always lean to is that's just an incidental? It's the preacher going till midnight, right? And we're not observing that meeting in the upper room. Why? Because we've reasoned through some things are just incidental details. And so I say that to say, when it comes to examples, we've got to learn how to sort through that. And then when stuff is implied. Now, I don't want to say it's super difficult, because I don't necessarily think it is. For instance, if God wants us as Christians to come together for worship, do you know what that implies? That necessarily implies we've got to have a place to do it and a time to do it. And so inference is not necessarily difficult, but we do have to be super careful that when we're drawing inferences, we don't allow them to draw us outside of God's authority. Now, again, this is not one setting type stuff, and so here's what I want you to see. Here is the takeaway. And that's when we're trying to find God's authority, we cannot violate the rules of basic communication. We just cannot violate the basic rules of communication when it comes to finding God's authority. Now that we've established that, I want to just kind of maybe give at least one more example of how we use all of these things. I want to suggest sometimes when it comes to finding authority, we have to use all of these things in order for us to know exactly what it is God's wanting. So let's take the Lord's Supper, for instance. The Lord's Supper that we all just participated in together. Jacob read from Matthew chapter 26. We also have in the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, we've got a very similar account. Maybe the wording is a little bit different. But I want you to think about the Lord's Supper and how we might just draw accurate conclusions based on what we have. And so Luke 22, beginning in verse 19, here's his account of that. And when he, talking about Jesus, had taken some bread and given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And in the same way, he took the cup after they had eaten, saying, "This cup, which is poured out for you, is the new covenant in my blood." And so here we have a lot just based on what Jesus says to the apostles. What we do have is we have very specific elements, right? Jesus says, take the bread and take the cup. And so there's the authority for that. And also, because Jesus was very specific, guess what we can't do? We can't turn it into chips and salsa and sweet tea, can we? And that's just, again, I'm not trying to be silly or oversimplifying, but if there is a very specific authority, then we have to recognize that's very specific. I don't have the right to bring in other foods or drinks into it, right? And so we get from Jesus here, we get the elements. And we also get what Jacob just pointed out to us. We get really the command. The command is the take it. And it's also the purpose is you're doing this in remembrance of me, right? That's easy stuff, right? So Jesus gives us the elements. He gives us the purpose. He gives us the command to do it. Now, what's missing from this gospel account, and what would be missing from all the gospel accounts? Well, we don't have anything about when. And we don't have anything about the how often here either, do we? So what I would say is, if we didn't have anything else in the New Testament about the Lord's Supper, would that leave us with some options? If we didn't have anything else, I think that would leave us with some options. Maybe we could just take it upon ourselves to decide, well, this is something important. We should do it three times a week, or we should do it once every other month, or whatever. You could reason through that if we didn't have anything else. But here's what we do have. We've got more when it comes to the Lord's Supper. And so now when we're trying to figure that out, we've got passages like Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. Here's an example. And I would suggest that we have a divinely approved example here, because we've got Paul. Remember, Paul is an inspired apostle. And him here, I believe, sanctions this as a good example. And so we draw from this example on the first day of the week. So now we're starting to kind of put another piece of the puzzle. This is on the first day of the week. We have Christians gathering together, and the stated purpose, at least here, is that they're going to break bread. And Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. That's the part we leave out, right? But we do see an example. Christians are coming together, and they're taking the Lord's Supper, and they're doing it on the first day of the week. Now, there's other information that we can draw from, and again, make these inferences from, based on the example that we have. And now we've got, in 1 Corinthians 10, Paul is talking about the Lord's Supper. In 1 Corinthians 11, he's talking about the Lord's Supper in the context of coming together as a church. Now, they had some issues that needed to be ironed out, but nonetheless, we've got an example of Christians coming together. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2, Paul is there talking about the collection, but notice what he says. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save, as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. And so now, based on all of that information, based on the commands, based on the example, based on all the other information that's at our disposal that we can infer from, we can come, I think, to an accurate conclusion about something like the Lord's Supper. I think there's God's authority for taking it. There's His authority for the bread and the cup. There's His authority for the first day of the week. I think there's the authority for every first day of the week. So, in view of all that, in view of the basic rules of communication, those are universal rules. In view of that, and in view of all the information that we've just thrown together, how do you feel about Tuesday Lord's Supper? What if we just decided we're just going to move worship in general, our church coming together, we're just going to move that to Tuesday mornings, 10 o'clock? Well, wouldn't your argument be, why? You'd start thinking, well, I don't have any reason to think Tuesday would be the day, right? Why not? Because God has not communicated that in any way. He certainly hasn't said it directly. I don't have any examples. I don't have any information that's pointing me to Tuesday. And so if I were going to try to make the case for Tuesday worship services and Tuesday Lord's Supper, guess what I would have to go on? I'd have nothing. And if I don't have anything by way of God's communication, guess what I also don't have? I don't have God's authority for that. And haven't we already established that we need God's authority for everything? Now, we can apply that to the day of worship. We can apply that to the Lord's Supper. Well, what if we made those same applications to something like bringing musical instruments into our worship service? We'll say, well, why do we not have that? And somebody might make an argument and they think, well, it's a good argument because we really like instruments and instruments sound good and maybe it could improve something and maybe it would give people a way to show off these special talents that God has given them. Well, you might could make all of those arguments, but if we're applying the basic rules of communication and we're looking for God's authority, then where would we go? Where would we turn to in our New Testament to find God's authority for that? Well, the answer is I don't have anything. If I don't have any communication from God, I don't have His authority. And we could make that same application to things like a suggestion to build a gymnasium or a family life center. So, well, where would we go to? Because the reality is we can comb all through our New Testaments and we never, ever, ever find anything that implies or says directly that it's the church's job to provide social activities. And so if I don't have anywhere in Scripture to find God saying it in some way or another, I don't have His authority. You get that? And so those are the fundamentals when we are trying to find the authority of God for everything that we do. The question is, has God revealed it in some way? And we have to go back to where this all started. If God has not revealed it, I can't presume to know it. And so somebody might say, well, you're just being legalistic. I think I mentioned that last time. Sometimes that's the accusation that comes out is you're just being legalistic. You're just being too strict. And maybe that is a good word to describe it. Maybe not. But here's my question. What else should I be? I mean, in view of needing God's authority, if I know that I need His authority, and I know that God has not expressed His authority for a certain thing, then what else can I do other than say, I don't have His authority. There is no other choice, is it? The only other thing we can do is say His authority doesn't matter or start making inferences that go outside of that authority. And so you can call it legalistic if you want. You can define it some other way, but the burden of proof is on you. If I need His authority and I don't find His authority in what He's communicated, then what else should I say? What else should I say? And so here's the question that we really just need to kind of have in our mind. We're thinking about His authority. We think we need His authority. Do my practices, and I'm talking about the practices in your personal life, and I'm talking about the practices of this congregation or any other congregation that we may decide I'm going to be a part of, do the practices stand up to the scrutiny of God's authority? And if you conclude that they don't, then there is an issue there, right? And we would need to move away from that. You know, some might just say, all I really want to be is a follower of Jesus. I don't care about all the rules. I don't care about the discerning of this and the discerning that. I just want to be a disciple of Jesus. I just want to follow Jesus. Well, guess what you cannot do and be a follower of Jesus? You cannot ignore the authority of God, because Jesus says over and over again, I always look to God. I don't do anything aside from the Father. Jesus emphasized number of times That me and the Father are one. I don't do anything of my own initiative. I only do what is consistent with God. And so if I want to be a follower of Jesus, I can only do what is consistent with God. Now, maybe this sparks other questions. And if it does, we'll be glad to have conversations. Because again, there's some stuff that's been left uncovered here. I admit that. But we have established two incredibly important things that I don't think you can argue with. One is that we do need God's authority. And two is that we can't break basic communication rules. If we can get those two things down, if it hasn't been revealed, I can't presume to know. If we've got those two things down, we can make a lot of headway in coming together, understanding what it is God wants. Now, thinking about the salvation of our souls, because we always end thinking about our souls. You think, well, what does His authority really have to do with my salvation? What does it really have to do with my soul? My salvation depends completely on God. That's what it has to do with it. My salvation, your salvation, depends entirely on God. Which means I've got to find a way to be right with God in everything. And so maybe as you're sitting here this morning, you're thinking about your life. Maybe you're thinking about I need to be right with God in everything. Maybe there's some area of your life in which you're not right with God. Maybe it pertains to the way that you're ordering life. Maybe it pertains to some of the things that you're participating in. Maybe you're just ignoring direct commands. Maybe you're involved in things. I don't know what it may be. But I do know there may be somebody here who needs to make a decision now about getting right with God. And if we can help you in that decision this morning, we offer you two things. I want to offer you the opportunity to just have a very private, very personal conversation with me or Jim or Jacob or Tim or anybody else that you feel like you can have that conversation with. You don't have to come before everybody and say, hey, I just need to talk. You can pull us to the side and we'll have that conversation with you. It may be that you're ready to respond right now, and it may be that you need to respond in front of everybody right now. We offer you that opportunity as we stand and sing.